Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. Joining me in the studio right now are two people from the American Legion because it is Wednesday, which means American Legion Day. I'm joined by Chinin Nuntavong. He is the... What is your position again?
I'm the media relations deputy director.
Deputy director. You work for Joe Plensler, our man. And our main guest today, not to put you down in any way, shape, or form, is Karanika Richardson. She is the head of the American Legion's Women and Minorities Veteran Outreach Program. Karanika, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for asking. So tell me, explain to our listeners exactly what is the Women and Minorities Veteran Outreach Program?
Sure. So the Women and Minority Veterans Outreach Program is a new and a growing program at the American Legion. Currently, we have done a large amount of things, but currently some of the things that we're doing is we're focusing on the data to see what it is that women veterans need. We're a population that has been underserved, and not a lot of data or research has been geared toward that population. So some of the things that I do is I kind of always follow the data, rather it be from the VA, legislations, and I look at that data to see what it is that the woman veteran actually needs. For example, we had our 99th annual convention in Reno, Nevada last summer, and based off the surveys that we did, some of the things that women veterans needed besides healthcare, because there are a lot of things that are being pushed for healthcare, so we wanted to take a different form to get women veterans the things that they needed besides healthcare things. And we had a conference, and in that conference, it was about career coaching, financial literacy, professional growth and development, and how to be physically fit and maintain that fitness when you come out of the military. So that was really good that we were able to get that data and see what women veterans wanted and needed, and we had a conference based on those things. But that's aside from healthcare.
Okay, this may ask you, it's a bit of a question, just I'm curious. You said part of the was career counseling for women and these other things. How does that differ from career counseling for men? Like, what makes it specific to women?
Well, it's not necessarily what makes it like different. I think that it's definitely the same, but it was just an area that women veterans have been underserved. So I don't think that it's something that has, there wasn't anything that men veterans couldn't benefit from from the conference, and men veterans were definitely welcome there as well. But it was just to highlight that and to let them know, like, hey, there's more things that you can do. Truthfully, I know sometimes a lot of the conferences and stuff are geared at certain businesses instead of corporate side. And we kind of focused on like how, hey, you can be the best in a corporate environment as well. So we focused on that as well. And just leadership skills and like how to step up, how to be the woman. Don't hide behind the position or don't hide behind responsibility. So more of that nature versus like the actual job itself.
Okay. That's very interesting. Now, I understand that you recently testified on Capitol Hill, you important person, you. So tell us, what were you testifying before Congress about?
So I testified on a couple bills, but before I begin, I would like to say that it was an amazing experience. I thought that I was testifying on behalf of 2 million members, the American Legion have 2 million members currently, and I was testifying on behalf of 2 million members at that time. So it was an amazing experience and a good thing to experience while I was there testifying. But I testified on H.R. 93. That was one of the bills that I testified on, and that bill is to increase the healthcare needs for women at the Veterans Affairs system. So the VA has been making improvements with women, but there are still a lot of areas and things that need to be accomplished. For example, the VA, there's an issue with in rural areas where women need to seek access care to gynecologists. There's not a full-time gynecologist on staff. There's also issues with the women always being referred to an outside specialty care versus more than the males. So there's a little issues that we have to work on to get increased improvements with the VA. But like I said, they have been making improvements. When you go to the VA, you can decide if you want to go into the woman's health clinic. I use the VA, so I usually go to the woman's health clinic, which means that I have a woman health care provider.
Okay, you just brought that up. You go to the VA. I assume that you're a veteran as well?
I am a veteran. I am an Army veteran. I served 8.5 years in the military. I enlisted first and then went over to the officer side. I've been doing quartermaster for a while. So I was enlisted as quartermaster and commissioned as a quartermaster officer as well.
Okay, so you got out. You did your 8 years and got out?
I did. Okay. 8.5 years.
Yeah. Okay, and you're Army, which means you're an incredibly smart and talented individual.
Absolutely.
If you can't tell, I'm an Army vet myself, and I like to give a little bit of a lip to Eric, who is unfortunately a Navy guy.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I am too, all the time. Now, you say access to specific for care for women veterans. That means stuff like say gynecologists, things like mammograms and things. These things that aren't available at, is it not available at most, or is it not available at any VA services?
Okay, so they are available at some, but the issue that we are encountering based off like surveys and data, and even from the VA itself, like in rural areas, that's an issue. For getting a gynecologist on site, like a full-time gynecologist, not even, some of them are part-time, but I'm not saying that they're not available at all. That's way too broad, but it's just not available at more than they are available at.
Okay. All right. So you testified on other things as well. The second thing, I believe, was the PAWS Act?
Yes, the PAWS Act, which stands for Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members. Before I begin telling you about that act, I also like to say that one of the things that was amazing that while I was testifying, and if you were able to pull that up online, you can't see that there were a lot of veterans behind me that was actually utilizing service dogs. So the same bill that I was testifying for, there were a lot of veterans in the room that were utilizing those services for the bill that we are trying to get pushed through.
Really? So kind of showing Congress that the people that are using it, that it's working for them.
Absolutely.
And then showing, well, hey, so this works for them, it can work for others.
Absolutely. And it wasn't planned, but that just happened. That's just how it happened. And it just made me, as I was speaking on behalf of the American Legion, deliver that testimony in a way that, like, hey, look, like, there's people here that needs a service dog. So
yeah, and then the second testimony will come from Rex and Rover. Yeah, and it wasn't planned, right? Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
So the most important thing about the Puppies Assisting Wounded Service Members, the PAWS Act, is that it will allow the VA to even recognize the use of service dogs. So right now, PTSD is an epidemic, and I think opioid abuse is an epidemic, and we have veterans who are willing to not use opioids and get an alternative form of treatment by using service dogs. And there have been multiple studies proven that service dogs do work as an alternative form of treatment. And we just want them to be able to use it and not take opioids if that's exactly what they don't want to do.
So. Okay. Let me, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but how can utilizing a service dog replace the need for opioids, because opioids are usually provided for pain medication. So how would a dog help with that?
Absolutely. So there are several stories in research showing how, and I'll answer it based on my knowledge. I'm not the scientific expert or medical researcher actually doing the research, but
you're not? I'm shocked. I'm kidding. That was a joke. I apologize.
So one of the things is that the service dogs help the veteran. So, for example, if it's an issue with the veteran having pain in their leg, and I'm talking really small scale, pain in their leg, and they have to generally, like, get up and go do this and that and that or whatever, the service dogs can help, like, bring whatever it is to help them stay off that leg a good bit. And if you're not saying that I'm trying to confine them to a bed or a sofa or anything like that, but it helps with them not having to aggravate that injury that much. And it also helps with bringing the companionship. Sometimes companionship can help I guess, increase like pain or, I mean, not increase pain, but help with pain as well.
I hope it doesn't increase pain. What are you testifying for, you mad woman?
Absolutely not. I hope it does not increase the pain, but.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So there, and I'm sure that there are more studies in the companionship and just being able to have someone that cares for you in that way and helps. So, and I've seen the service dogs being used, rather it's waking up a veteran in a meeting who has problems with sleeping or just from falling asleep from the side effect from the opioids. So just waking them up and helping them be alert. I've just seen like them being so helpful in many ways. Rather, it's just helping that veteran who have sweats in the middle of the night from dreams and stuff, just helping them like recompose themselves and all that stuff. So there are a lot of benefits to having a service dog and to combat the opioid abuse.
Yeah, I can sort of attest to this. I don't have a service dog, but I recently bought a dog. Mm-hmm. And as someone who suffers from some service-related things like that, it does help just having that companion, having someone happy to see you when you open the door, you know? Yeah. So I can sort of attest to that.
Good. Yeah. So we're testifying for it. We're trying to get it pushed through. So.
I'm attesting, you're testifying. You see, it all balances out like that.
And I'm glad that I can be used as a vessel in this way to keep pushing it through so that you guys can benefit. And I think that it's something that's needed as well. So.
Okay. Now we're going to continue on here. You testified about one more thing, and if I understand right, it's one thing you couldn't remember the exact name of it.
Well, yeah, it's called I couldn't remember the actual the bill number, but I do have it now. It's called the HR 1063.
Okay.
And that's a bill. It's called the Veterans Prescription Continuity Act. And on that bill, it's a bill where when members of the service transfer from the Department of Defense, because when you're in the military, you fall under the Department of Defense. And then when they come out of the military, they then fall under the Department of Veterans Affairs. But there's not really a connection between the two, even though we may think that, but it's not. So when they get off from the Department of Defense and transfer over to the VA, their medications are being changed.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like it purposefully or just because they don't know?
I think it's because you have a doctor who works for the Department of Defense, and then you have a doctor who works for the Department of Veterans Affairs. And sometimes getting them on the same accord could be an issue.
Oh,
and
okay.
They're not transferring over the prescription. So then when the veteran gets out, it can be a whole nother prescription. It can be a whole nother company. It can be another like provider. So I think that's an issue.
Yeah, and that can be dangerous if you immediately switch to another medication.
Yeah.
The two medications could interact poorly, or you could have a reaction to one of them, and that's dangerous.
Yeah, and transition is hard enough. You don't want to be worrying about your medical supplies like while you're transitioning. Transitioning alone is a lot like that you have to deal with. So definitely, that's something that we are trying to push through as well.
Okay, speaking of transition, we're going to shift gears here a little bit. How was your transition? What did you face any particular struggles when you were getting out of the military?
Great question.
Well, thank you. It's kind of my job.
Yeah, to think of the good questions. Yeah. I think that I did face struggles with transitioning. And my reasoning behind saying that I did is because I didn't know what was available. So, for example, when I got out in 2012, I apparently had 5 years of the VA after I got out. I qualified for that. But guess what? I didn't know. I found out on the fifth year.
Oh.
So I started using those benefits the fifth year. 4 years while I was paying out of my pockets for private health insurance and stuff like that. I didn't know. So I would say that was definitely a challenge because I didn't know. So that's one of the things that we're doing at the American Legion in my platform as a woman and minority veteran outreach coordinator is that we are trying to do the research, get the data out there and see what they need, but also tell them what they already have. So that's something that we are working and pushing hard to do as well. So that was my challenge, not knowing what I qualified as or even identifying as a veteran. So.
Okay. Now I have a question about you're the head of the Women and Minorities Veteran Outreach Program. The other part of that is we talked about the women part now about minorities. Mm-hmm. Do they face special challenges or there are problems with them at the VA? What sort of aspects are you looking out for them?
Absolutely. So there's definitely a, so first I would like to say that we do tend to look at different ethnic groups for the minority portion, but I do want to say that women as a whole, they do belong to the minority portion.
Okay, you're
right.
So I
want to clarify that.
Okay.
I mean, but in response to your question, yes, there are different barriers that women in different ethnic groups face as they transition. And it could be a simple matter of where they transition to. So as I said earlier, like trying to find a gynecologist in rural areas, not saying that all women in the minority transition to rural areas is not what I'm implying, but statistically, there's just an issue with that in those areas. So yeah, there's definitely different barriers as far as like who gets jobs, who goes to school, just sometimes because when you transition out the military, sometimes people go back to where they came from instead of a new area. And it's given with statistics that sometimes the minority population suffers a little bit more. So yeah.
Right. I understand that. When I first got out, I went straight back to Houston, Texas, where I was born. And I kind of fell into the rut of just kind of sitting there for a couple months, not knowing what to do. And yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Well, now it paid off because you're doing big things and it's awesome.
I know. I know, right? Gosh, I'm awesome.
Awesome. Army always leads the way.
Exactly.
No matter what we do.
See, she gets it, man. So how did you get involved with the American Legion? Like what led you to this organization over, say, other VSOs?
Oh, okay. The reason why I chose to work at the American Legion is because I thought that the American Legion always represented themselves in a way that had a sense of dignity and pride, I would say, I don't want to say a because I don't even know if a UMP is a word, but it was just like a, because before I got to the American Legion, I was working on Capitol Hill and I would see them all the time, like there. So I think that like just the way how they always represent themselves, always testifying, always in front of Capitol Hill, advocating, not saying that the others didn't, but it was just like, whenever I saw it on TV that the American Legion was testified, it was always something that I was like, oh, let me see what they're talking about. And it made sense. And it was something like I personally agreed with. And sometimes like when you work on jobs, there could be conflicts about what you believe in and what your job or your organization as a nonprofit believes in. So my beliefs and the American Legion's kind of merge. I kind of felt integrated with that.
Okay. So how did the journey go of getting involved with the American Legion to becoming the head of this whole part of the whole program of it?
I think it was just, I came in as the assistant director for this program. However, the director, even when the director was there, I was still kind of like, she kind of gave me the flexibility to run point on it because it was so much things that we needed to do. And it was a growing program. So a lot of it was a lot of like behind the scenes work and research and all that stuff. I'm the head now because the director isn't there anymore. I'm not the director, but I'm still the assistant director. But I think that just kind of fell into my hands because of the work that I've been doing prior to the American Legion,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
So what was that? You mentioned working on Capitol Hill. What were you doing there?
I was working in Senator Donnelly's office. I have to definitely give him a plug. He was an amazing, he was so amazing, especially for advocating on behalf of veterans. But I think that, I'm sorry, what was your question? Can you repeat that?
The question was, what were you doing on Capitol Hill and how did you transition from that to the American Legion? Like, what made you decide to do, I'm going to go to the American Legion full time?
Oh, so after I got, let me back up track before Capitol Hill. But after I got out of the military, I knew that I was kind of drawn to working with veterans. But fast forward to Capitol Hill. So I was working in a senator's office, Senator Donnelly. I was working in his office doing as a military fellow under the programs of Hill Vets. So Hill Vets is a program that works with getting more veterans on the Hill. Because right now, like how there's like 1% that serves, there's also like almost 1% of veterans working on the Hill.
Yeah, we actually talk with Justin Brown from Hill Vets every week. So
okay,
we're
yeah.
very familiar with that organization.
Yeah, Justin, I know Justin. So he selected me for the program. So I did that, and a part of that program, I was working in Senator Donnelly's office, so I was like a military legislative assistant, like fellow. So I only dealt with military and veterans affairs and stuff like that. So reading letters from constituents, searching up on bills, getting Purple Hearts awarded that was past due and stuff like that. So I was working there, and that kind of segued into me still working with veterans at the American Legion. So,
Okay. Working with, or specifically dealing with women and minority veteran outreach, how does that feel? Like, does it give you a sense of accomplishment, or how does it feel knowing that you have an impact on this group, on a group of people that has been historically sort of glossed over a little bit?
And that's even hard to put in words, how I feel. I definitely think a sense of gratitude, getting up each day knowing that whatever I do or whatever I accept for tasks or whatever I put myself out there to do, it's helping someone, that population that needs to be helped. So I think it's gratifying. It's a sense of, I guess, dignity and pride that I get every time that I do something or find some information out or find out about a resource. I'm like, I got to get this out. So I it's a rewarding job. I can truthfully say that I make a difference and I make an impact on what I do. So it helps with days when it's raining outside and I would like to stay in bed. It helps with days like that. Like, hey, you got things to do. Get up. So, yeah. So it's gratifying. It's really gratifying.
Well, I'm glad. You always should get feelings of, you know, positive feelings from your job. And I admit, if I had your kind of job, I'd feel great about myself too. Instead, I'm just here being a guy that talks to a microphone all day.
Well, you're getting the information out, so that's still best. That's still good. You're getting the information out. And I feel like to expand on that question a little bit more, I feel like as long as we may think that we have on this earth, our time is very limited. Our time is very short. We know that there is an ending. And I feel like life is too short to be doing something that you don't want to do or you're not passionate about. So it was like after I got out of the military, and I was really passionate about that. I joined when I was 17. It was like one of the best decisions I ever made. And I feel like from that day that going forward in life, I couldn't do anything I didn't want to do. I had to want to do it and fulfill my purpose in life. So,
right.
Yeah. Not to be all philosophical and spiritual and all that stuff, but
not to be philosophical, but here's a really philosophical answer. No, it's okay. So, do you have any other initiatives or programs coming up that you would like to sort of plug?
Well, sure. We have a couple of things coming up, especially going forward in a new year. We have a couple of programs that we're thinking about doing. And it's even like having a monthly meeting to meet up with women veterans once we get that population that we need. Also, for our 100th anniversary, the American Legion is celebrating its 100th year. It's centennial, so it's going to be really, really big. We're having like a 3 or 4 day women's conference there.
Oh,
as
wow.
Well. It's going to be located in, I think, Minnesota this year. So I think that's where our centennial is. So that's going to be really exciting. And I'm in the planning phases for that as well. So that's going to be exciting. Yeah.
All right. It sounds exciting.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you'd like to say? Any other information you want to get out there? Well, to all the people listening to ConnectingVets.com?
I would say that if you have any questions, make sure that you reach out. And my information is krichardson@legion.org. And it's K, like in kilo, Richardson, RICHARDSON, at legion.org. And if you have any questions, just reach out to us. And if we don't know, I can find the answer for you. We're a growing program. So even if you don't have a question, just email me so that you can get on our distro list. So that way, when there are things that coming up, we can definitely email you because we're growing. And there's always something that needs to be planned or something that's planned. Sometimes it's just like a 30 days notice, like, hey, we should do this. This will be good for our veterans right now, women veterans, so let's do it. So once again, just reach out to me if you think that you want to get added to our distro list and kind of always stay in the know. I think that you should do that as well.
So. Okay, well, Karanika Richardson and Chinen Nuntavong, y'all, thanks so much for coming on the show. We're always happy to have the American Legion here.
Thank you. We are very appreciative of being here as well. So thanks for having us.
All righty.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.